Okay, good evening. Nice to see everyone here this evening. We've been going through a series this summer on the God of mankind's blessedness. It's been a good series. I haven't had a chance to listen to them all, but I always appreciate hearing the different speakers talk on the different topics, and I appreciate the encouraging words that all of you have given to me tonight. You know, it's not exactly my comfort zone to get up here and talk, but I'm always happy to do so, and so it's a good learning process for me when I do that. So, you know, God wants nothing more for man than for us to be blessed. We know that God is the definition of love. We see in 1 John chapter 4, verse 16, God is love, period. I mean, he's the definition of love. And we know that he loved the world so much that he gave his only son for us. You know, think about that. Hard to imagine giving up your only son, but that's what God did for us. So he wants us to feel blessed. He wants us to be happy. And I think that that theme would carry on through all the lessons that we're talking about this summer. So how do we acquire the blessedness of God? Really, I think we acquire that through righteousness, through living a righteous life. The definition of righteousness is acting in accord with a divine or moral law. So we're following his word. Righteousness leads to blessedness. And I'd like to read from Psalms 1, verses 1 and 3. And I think it talks about this point and makes the connection between the two terms, the two ideas, righteousness and blessedness. How blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor stand in the path of sinners, nor sit in the seat of scoffers. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. He will be like a tree firmly planted by streams of water, which yield its fruits in its seasons, and its leaf does not wither. And whatever he does, he prospers. So, we see righteousness, according to Psalms 1, is acquired by not walking in the counsel of the ungodly. You know, these three steps we're going to look at here, they're written on the negative side, but I think a lot of times in life, I learn more from mistakes versus somebody telling me this is what you should do or how you should behave. The mistakes, I think, stand out even more. So I kind of appreciate the way it's written here. So we're not to take counsel from ungodly people and how we should live. They're not our examples to follow. You know, we don't want to take their advice if they're sinful people. Psalms 1 also talks about not standing in the path of sinners. We don't want to linger around the sinners. You know, evil companions corrupt good morals from 1 Corinthians. I think that's a very good principle to remember as we live our lives. And to not sit in the seat of the scornful. We don't want to join ourselves with those who ridicule and mock us or others for trying to do what's right. You know, a lot of times I think people that are sinners often do that just to try to justify or fortify their own conduct and defend their actions. So, you know, we need to be careful not to get sucked into that, I guess. So, righteousness. You know, those are some steps on how we can acquire it. Righteousness, though, it comes with a cost. Benjamin Franklin once said, there are no pains without gains. And another way to put that is very similar concept and wording, but more concise, no pain, no gain, and everyone in this audience has heard that term, especially the younger ones. Some of them might have written on the back of their shirt somewhere. But, you know, we can't expect to gain great things without any efforts, without putting forth, you know, to challenge ourselves and that sort of thing. So I think that that's an important concept to keep in mind when we're talking about righteousness. We're not going to acquire righteousness unless we really put forth an effort into it. Another common phrase or a quote that I've heard is, if it was easy, everyone would do it. And I think that goes back to what we were talking about in Psalms 1. You know, it's real easy to walk in the counsel of the wicked. All you have to do is start walking and you're going to find that situation. And it's real easy to stand in the path of sinners and sit in the seat of scoffers. That's the path of least resistance. You know, you're just going forward without much thought and just accepting things as they come to you. I think some common examples of, I was thinking about myself growing up, you know, in high school, I didn't apply myself very well. It's always nice to see kids today that apply themselves a lot more than I did. Fortunately, our three children, they took after their mother more than myself in high school and, you know, didn't take the path of least resistance like I did. But, you know, we can't expect things to just come to us, you know, just to barely squeak by in life, whether it's school or whether it's work or whether it's interacting with people and caring for them, identifying needs that they may have. We need to put forth effort in our physical lives and our spiritual lives. I think the biblical principle, you reap what you sow, is very true here. You know, we need to put forth effort and so we can have reward, a worthy reward. Another quote that comes to mind thinking about the cost and the tie between that and righteousness is, if it seems too good to be true, it probably is. You know, we're always looking for the easy fix. You get that phone call, hey, you know, I got a free trip for you. All you have to do is, you know, do something for 30 minutes and you got $1,000 free trip. Well, it's not always that simple. So, you know, a lot of good things come with a cost, is the idea I'm trying to get across here. In Luke chapter 14, Jesus is talking about the discipleship, and he's talking about the cost of discipleship, basically. And in these two verses, he says to his disciples, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Now, a lot of times the word hate here is easy to say, okay, well, he's wanting people to hate others, you know, and that doesn't seem right. And it really isn't, because hate just is simply saying that love less. So love less all these important people in your life than me. And it makes perfect sense, because if you love God and if you love him in the way that he loves you, then, you know, if you were to scale, I like to scale things out on graphs, I mean, that love would be greater than you can put on a graph. And so that allows you to even love those people in your life even that much more, because you have that love for God. So it's not cheapening or lessening your relationships that you have with other people. But it's also requiring more effort, more cost to, you know, for that relationship. One thought that has always kind of interested me is in verse 27, he says, whoever does not carry his own cross and come after me cannot be his disciple. You know, think about that. When we think about carry your own cross, we identify right away, we go right to the cross of Christ, you know, Christ on Calvary. Well, he was saying this before the crucifixion. So the people that he was talking to maybe didn't have the same appreciation for what he was saying, because the cross didn't mean the same thing to them at that time than it does to us now, because we're looking back on the cross. But when we, you know, when we see that, carry his own cross, we're thinking the idea of sacrificing for self, you know, sacrificing self for God. And we understand what the idea of sacrifice means, because we saw that when Jesus was on the cross of Calvary. So that was truly a cost of just displaying righteousness. So the sign of being a disciple, I think what we can get from this passage and verses further down is that a disciple is someone who's determined, who's committed, very deliberate about what they do, and very focused on what they do. Well, verse 28, I don't have it up here on the screen. Verse 28 says, "For which one of you, when he wants to build a tower, does not first sit down and calculate the cost to see if he has enough to complete it?" So, being a disciple, living a righteous life, you're calculating the cost. You're trying to, you know, work towards something. And that gets us to the theme of what my lesson is about. You know, when Jerry gave us different assignments, the title of my lesson that he assigned was "The Cost to the One Who Wants to Be Blessed by God." So what's the cost? Well, that cost is talked about in Psalms 24. Psalms 24, verses 1 and 2 says, "The earth is the Lord's, and all it contains, the world and those who dwell in it. For he has founded it upon the seas and established it upon the rivers." So all I wanted to get out of those two verses is that it's identifying the fact that God is our creator and the entire earth is his. And as a result of that, I mean, we need to be in awe of him as the creator and have complete respect for him for what he's done. There's a couple of verses that I'd like to point out that I think talk about that. Romans chapter 1, verse 20. We've heard this verse a number of times. I know Larry just preached on it a few weeks ago. "For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature have clearly been seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse." Like Larry said in his lesson, and I've heard this before at other times too, there's no society on the face of this earth, in history, that hasn't had an idea or a thought of a creator. I mean, there's always been the thought that somebody somehow created us, whether, you know, they were on track or not. The fact that, you know, it's in our hearts, like Romans chapter 1, verse 20 says, these invisible attributes, there's a thing out there that tells us that there is a creator. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 11 speaks about the same thing. He has made everything appropriate in its time. He has set eternity in the heart, yet so that man will not find out the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. So eternity is set in the heart of man. So with that in mind, I just kind of want to set the scene for the next four verses, which we're going to talk about in a little more detail, because, you know, we should be in awe of the fact that, you know, we are seeking God and he's our creator. So, Psalms 24, verses 3 through 6. Verse 3 starts out with two questions. "Who may ascend into the hill of the Lord, and who may stand in his holy place? He who has clean hands and a pure heart, who has not lifted up his soul to falsehood, and has not sworn deceitfully. He shall receive a blessing from the Lord, and righteousness from the God of his salvation. This is the generation of those who seek him, who seek your face, even Jacob." So, questions to consider from verse 3. Who may ascend into the hill of the Lord, and who may stand in his holy place? I think we understand what that would be referring to. It's just seeking God. And it's something that I know we all want to do. I mean, I know every single person here in this room, so I know that's why we're here and what we're all wanting to do. Matthew 6:33 tells us that we need to have God as our top priority in our life. "Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. So our mindset should be as defined by the desire we have to ascend into the hill of the Lord, that we may stand in this holy place. That needs to be our mindset. And to kind of maybe help us appreciate that more, picture it a little bit better, the mindset we should have, I think we can look to a couple of very brief parables. The parables were spoken by Jesus to talk about the kingdom of heaven. You know, so many times they start out saying the kingdom of heaven is at hand, or the kingdom of heaven is like this. So in Matthew chapter 13, verse 44, the parable of the hidden treasure, just one verse long. The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in the field, which a man found and hid again. And from joy over it, he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. So that describes just a very strong desire for something. And that something is the kingdom of heaven. The next two verses in Matthew 13, the parable of the costly pearl. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking fine pearls, and upon finding one pearl of great value, he went and sold all that he had and bought it. So there's a lot of effort going towards acquiring something that's more important than anything else, I think is what is being described here. I like to read nonfiction history. I'm a big fan of reading about the presidents, you know, what their lives were like. And the last president I read about was Theodore Roosevelt. And he's somebody that was very privileged, but he didn't take that for granted. I mean, he's somebody that took advantage of all the opportunities he had and made the most of it. He worked really hard. And I like this quote that he said. He said, "Far and away, the best prize that life offers is the chance to work hard at work worth doing." So we need to make the most of our opportunities. You know, that's a cost, I guess, that we have to pay. But if we do that, then we'll be richly blessed by that. So, verse 4, you know, we saw two questions that were asked in verse 3. Verse 4, God provides the answers to those questions. First, he says, the first answer to the question of ascending to the hill of God and who's going to stand in his holy place, he who has clean hands and a pure heart, who has not lifted up his soul to falsehood, and has not sworn deceitfully. So, he who has clean hands and a pure heart. Clean hands would suggest they refer to conduct or behavior. Doing the right things to be pleasing to God. There's an objective standard which we can determine right from wrong, and of course that's God's word. And so, you know, if our hands are clean, we're following God's word. We're doing what he wants us to do. A pure heart, that points more to the motivation behind what you're doing. Are you acting with the right attitude? Proverbs 23:7 says, "As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he." In other words, the attitudes that we have, they lead to action. If it's in our heart, then it's going to be manifested in what we do. So the attitude and the action are directly related. And Matthew chapter 5, verse 8, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." So hopefully these verses kind of give us an idea of what it means to have a pure heart and how important it is. The second answer that's in verse 4 is, who has not lifted up his soul to falsehood. So this is what the New American Standard Version, or New American Standard Bible says, who has not lifted his soul to falsehood. I thought I'd take a look at some other versions just to see some of the differences and maybe give us a little flavor, different flavor on what it may be saying. King James Version says, who has not lifted up his soul unto vanity. New King James, who has not lifted up his soul to an idol. And New International, who does not trust in an idol. So, the idea of lifted up his soul, I think it refers to what our desire is. I mean, you know, our soul is our inner being. What's our desire? And the desire should be to hunger and thirst after righteousness, which happened to be the title of my lesson last summer in the summer lectureship. But, you know, we need to hunger and thirst after righteousness. Matthew 5, 6, blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. And the third answer to the questions of verse 3 and verse 4, has not sworn deceitfully, is not deceitful, is another way to answer those questions. Proverbs chapter 4, verses 23 through 26, I think help us see what this means. Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. Put away from you a deceitful mouth, and put devious speech far from you. Let your eyes look directly ahead, and let your gaze be fixed straight in front of you. Watch the path of your feet, and your ways will be established. So there's four different characteristics, I guess, that are being talked about here. And I think this passage is a reminder for us to be diligent about our heart, watch over our heart with all diligence, our mouth, what we say. You know, we know the power of the tongue and the influence that it can have. Let our eyes look directly ahead, be fixed. You know, don't let them wander to one way or the other. Don't follow that path of least resistance that I referred to. And our walk, our daily walk, watching our feet where we go. So, really, that's the essence of what I wanted to cover. And just to review, you know, there's two questions. Who may ascend into the hill of the Lord, and who may stand in his holy place? God gives the answers. He who has a clean heart, or clean hands and a pure heart, who has not lifted up the soul to falsehood, and has not sworn deceitfully. So, if we pay those costs in verse 4, then the results talked about in verse 5. And verse 5 again, verse 5 says, he shall receive a blessing from the Lord and righteousness from the God of his salvation. So the results are receive a blessing from the Lord and receive righteousness from the God of our salvation. Sounds pretty simple, doesn't it? It is. I mean, it's very simple. I couldn't help but looking at it a little bit different way. You know, there's a lot of things in life where we look at the cost and the benefit and we weigh them, and, you know, if the cost is worth the benefit, you go forward with it. And that's what I do a lot with my jobs, and I usually assign dollar signs to each side of the analysis. But the cost here, clean hands, pure heart, have no falsehoods or idols in our lives, no deceitfulness to be found in the way we act or behave. And the benefits, blessings from God, and righteousness before God. I'd like to leave you with one thought here. Somebody that Mindy and I have a lot of admiration for told her one time, life can be hard, but it is so worthwhile. That's true. I mean, you know, there is no easy way through life. It involves a lot of effort, a lot of cost, but when you live your life that way, then there's also a lot of blessings to follow. And that pretty much sums it up. Again, I appreciate the opportunity to speak before you. Certainly, we're always here to help in any way that there's a spiritual need that anyone might have. And this is an opportunity that you would have to come forward and talk to somebody, or, you know, visit with